operational needs, but a vacant engineer position, the salary is, starts at 41,680 to 60,435. But Kenneth,
You can't find it cheap. Can you find anybody for that little bit of money?
Yeah, actually, we were, you know, the, when we started having the board workshops, we were within a few days of holding interviews with what was a very promising candidate.
For that,
Yes, sir.
That's hard to believe.
He's currently working at another engineering firm. He's a civil degree. He was very, very promising.
Well, call him up.
I can't fund it right this second.
So we did have, we reduced the fund, that was part of our operational reductions, was to, we basically froze all open positions at the time when we were working through balancing the budget. Now, this position is funded 50% by general fund, and then how is it broken out?
In general terms, it's 50% road and bridge, 50% general, but we also have percentages in there for the landfill fund, which is 0262 mm-hmm. cost center. So there's a port, it comes, this one is actually funded out of three different cost centers.
So it's not 50-50, it's?
50-50 is the percentage for 0303 and 0304 cost centers,
okay.
But then 0262 is separate and apart from that. So those, the percentages for that one, and I want to say it's about 85% or so of this position is allocated to those two cost centers, is funded half and half.
Does part of your salary come out of that landfill fund?
That's correct.
What's the balance in that fund? It's a chunk of money.
It's a chunk of money, I believe.
Well, when you say
how many people you add to it every year, a little bit? Mm-hmm.
Isn't it about, is it between $400,000 and $500,000?
Yeah, it's about $400,000 or $500,000, if I remember.
The largest portion of that is in the reserve funding for, you basically, we have to maintain the grass cover for perpetuity, whether you like it or not.
Wait a minute now.
Yes, sir.
You checked with Frank DeRobbie on that lately?
I've checked with DEP.
Frank leads me to believe that once you've completed your 30 years, you don't have to do anything else. You can let it grow up in bushes if you want. Now, I'm just visiting the Frank.
I understood, and I would respectfully disagree.
Okay, I'll verify that with Frank.
So from a monitoring standpoint, he's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
We ended ours in 2016, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. We still have some institutional controls that we need to implement because there was some arsenic and cadmium levels on the southern interface.
So you're saying we don't need to spend that $500,000 all of it?
And that's what I have told, I don't know if we've had the conversation yet with Danielle, but Tammy and I had an understanding that, hey, we don't exhaust this because if there were, let's just say, a deluge of rain and we lost the side of that slope, I got to have money to go fix it.
You got to maintain the slope?
My understanding is that I have to maintain the cover over that.
I don't
have to monitor it anymore, but I still have to keep it as in a safe state.
I thought maybe just leave it alone. The pine trees grew up on the side of it. I don't know how you harvest it. But anyway.
It'd be tough. It's steep.
It would be palatable, I think, to the board if you could maximize the salary of the additional engineer out of that fund. That's all I'm getting at.
And we did. We always tried to distribute the percentages as much as we could to offset the overall impact of the road and bridge fund, primarily because we knew there was a direct linkage to the road department and the secondary improvement fund. So if I can minimize that, I lessen the financial obligation on those two.
I would prefer, this is one commission, short-term commission, that you take the funding out of the solid waste, that closure fund we're talking about, and the road department, rather than the general fund, because the road department, we subsidize that with some road money. We have less secondary road paving money coming into the district, so we just have to have a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about funding half of $65,000 or $80,000, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a piece out of our little discretionary.
Well, that's not the total impact. That would just be, is it, you didn't take
you just about double it. I mean, whatever the salary is, you double it for the overhead.
Well, I was just using 80 there. You should say 100.
Right. 80 is probably about right.
80 or 100, say 100. 50, that's 10,000 apiece. Instead of getting 20,000 next year, to get a little bit of real estate money, you're going to get 10.
Go ahead and take it all.
The only thing I would say is that we generally assign percentages for a cost center based upon the areas of responsibility that they're actually doing the work.
Yeah.
So keeping a percentage that comes out of the general fund allows us to do projects like load ramps, Hodges Park, things like that, where we actually are doing that type of work. If you structure your payment, your salaries only coming out of road and bridge and solid waste, then everything they do, theoretically, from my bean counter over here, is going to say it, that money, they can only work on those type of projects.
I agree. But I mean, you're messing with that general fund. We already strapped there.
You're
talking about a millage increase.
Only thing I would say is that if there were an opportunity to be able to address it in next fiscal year, that when I did the design on the Amtec Less Lethal property, we received $104,000 reimbursement for our design efforts and project management for that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say there's about $30,000 or so of that left that we have the discretion to, we could use that to balance the salary for the balance of the year, fiscal year, as long as there were assurances that, I don't want to hire somebody and say you're good till September, but then I got to let
you
go.
No, you can't do that.
So only if there was a general consensus of assurance that, okay, we understand this is going to be something that you put in your budget request for next fiscal year. I feel we can limp along until then and not affect, I don't believe we can affect the overall budget that's there now.
Yeah.
As long as there is enough assurance that next fiscal year that it wouldn't be a common issue.
Well, I think between the three pots of money we've identified, the general fund, landfill closure, and the road department, that we all can make this work.
I know I can just about make it work with that money.
Yeah, with that money.
But that's just for the current year.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. You gotta tell me.
I would suggest y'all figure out the detail, but I'm gonna go for this.
Me too.
So, tell me how much money we're talking about.
I want to say, Marcia can correct me if I'm wrong here. I think we were leaning at the 40,000 thereabouts salary. Sorry, I think it was right around the 40,000.
Civil engineer?
Yes, sir. Well, the difference would be it doesn't have to be a civil, and it wasn't required that they have a PE, design the PE,
okay.
But they needed to have the EIT, which is an engineer intern, to show that they have, you know, the aptitude to perform. We were asking for, we started out asking for experience, and it got to where if you've got an experienced design engineer, they're not wanting to leave where they're at and come here. And so we started considering internship that they may have done while they're at school. And this gentleman is where he was able to do that, and then he's gaining experience now at an engineering firm.
Well, go find Sonny Anderson in the engineering.
Who's that?
Sonny Anderson. You remember the dog man?
Yeah.
Well, we were leaning towards if the engineer.
I'm recommending that.
If the engineer position wasn't going to be a possibility, what I was hoping to suggest that we entertain would be an intern. An intern that is in an engineering program that's maybe at your junior or senior level. That a lot of times those students will try to get in an engineering firm to kind of get their foot in the door and gain a little bit more experience before they hit that that career path. DOT has an internship program. It has a lot of it spelled out as far as minimum hours, maximum hours, compensation rates, things like that. We were wanting to consider if we couldn't go a full position to at least craft something that was along those lines to get a warm body in there to help start alleviating some of the work.
Make it work.
It's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
And that too, there's duration constraints that they can't be there forever. They can only be there for a certain amount of time. And there is a local boy that's that fits that criteria. Luke Slaughter, he works at Hibbets. He's put himself through school, and he works with Robert Blue at surveying, or he has worked with him for surveying. He's in the civil program. He's at a senior level in FSU. You know, and he's looking for a way to get an internship. Hey, there's an opportunity.
Opportunity right there. And that's you. You said the right word.
Well, and if you think about it, if I have a finite time, I'm going to be here, and you wind up getting a local boy that is interested in this agency as a career path, who better to keep around that is going to stay here, you know, versus trying to bring somebody else in? Just a thought. I mean, whichever way we go, I would obviously be pleased with having somebody to help.
Okay. We need
it. I'd rather have a look for it.
Yeah. Look, we can hammer it if we hire somebody not local.
So if that's the decision, then we can bring that that draft. Just, I guess it would be a job description.
What's that? For the internship?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and like I said, Marshall and I have already kind of talked about this a little bit. We would frame it very much akin to the DOT program. That's because I've already talked with them. A lot to have them send me their documentation on how it's structured.
You have my 20% blessed.
So we could tailor that to fit our needs, and that way I think we at least have a standard that we're kind of following.
Yeah, and just for the public, we're not increasing our expenditure in the general fund. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
We've had this position already.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anything else on number one? Item number one. Okay, we'll cross that one out. We'll go to item two, Restore Act. Yeah.
What was item one? What's it going?
The road resurfacing of paving.
I just have one thing I want to bring to Kenneth's attention before we have to go do something. As you know, with everybody's help, we started on Harrison Wood. Mm-hmm. And I made a terrible mistake, Kenneth, yesterday. To ride down there and just rubber that for a minute. Just drove through. I got bombarded with three people who questioned the elevation of the slab. And I said, y'all talk to Kenneth? And yeah, I said, well, I mean, you know, he's our engineer. I don't have anything to do with the elevation of the slab. And they pointed out, you're pouring slab out here, Commissioner. 2 1/4 inches above the one that you already got split. Uh-huh. I said, I'm not getting involved. I'm not an engineer. We pay big money to have this design done. So I just wonder if you've got any thoughts about that.
I do. The way that we set the finish for was consistent with JEA's design plan.
That's what I figured.
Because first, I got bombarded with the questions too about. First of all, it was, why are we sticking it here? These people that are coming in the gate are going to run into it, and it's going to be in the way.
Move that right.
And then, you know, we're not putting it any higher than what this other one is, so aren't we just going to have the same problem that we're here? And I told them, said, okay, you're looking at what's here now. You're not looking at the way it's supposed to be.
When we get sucked up.
That's correct. So the problem that we have out around a lot of our roll-off sites is we have standing water or ruts and stuff all around the compactor. And the simple fix is we go in there and we put more material on it. More material, more material, more material. When we start these things and we put in the new slabs, you know, it's like a 4-inch lip or so that it's above the grade. That one was either the most recent or the next to the most recent. It's already at a point that it's getting below the adjacent grade.
Yeah.
So Gary is already well aware, and so is Hank, that our plan is to put in this building, remove the other building.
Yeah.
And I told the attendant when he started questioning that, I said, well, sir, first of all, we can move your truck out the way. And then we can move that container out of the way. And there's a straight shot. They can drive through. Well, they're driving behind my building. Yes, they are, temporarily. But as soon as we get this building done, that building goes away, and he's driving right across your face.
Yeah.
That's the way we want it. It's just like Carlton Cemetery.
Right.
Anytime they come into the site, they can't get past you. So I told him, I said, look, give it some time. Let us finish the job that we're doing and know that we have to do some grading here. So Oakland called me yesterday afternoon late, and he said, he had told me that you had stopped by.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to plan for the possibility that it's going to take a while for Public Works to have enough free time to commit to getting out and regrading this site. So I gave him the marching orders yesterday. I said, mark it up 4 inches. Put a 2x4 right on top of your form so you don't have to take anything out that you've already done. That'll raise the elevation of it, and then what we'll do in the when we get everything back to where it's supposed to be is we'll just have a little bit quicker fall on the water that's going back to the flow line away from the dust.
That's a good solution to that.
It was just an easy way to keep them productive,
mm-hmm.
and it to be a realistic safeguard against Public Works becoming burdened and not being able to get out there.
Yeah. Well, I think so it may be a while before you get out there and get the slope done. And if you build a new building out here, and then the first time we have a 5-inch rain, it's 3 inches deep in water, you and I are going to get... So I think that's a good move you made. Move it up 2x4.
Yes, sir.
And you got it.
He's already working on it.
Got it. Man, you're a good man.
That's all you pass.
I didn't have to get involved. You already had saw.
Well, and that's the way we kind of approach things from a project standpoint, yeah. is when you guys give us orders to, we're going to do this, we're going to fund it, then we, and I'm saying this end of the table, we have a responsibility to make that happen and handle all of the nuances of that project. We take it very seriously.
Y'all do. Very and serious. You do a good job.
There's 20,000 head out there watching everything we do.
They are. And let me tell you, I ain't going back to Harrison Blue, I'm going to Carlton.
I go to that roll-off site every week or every other week, something like that. And I flash my card, and that guy has no idea who I am relative to the county. Until
right?
I showed up yesterday, and yeah. you know,
then he finds out.
Oh. and I don't tell people because it shouldn't matter.
Well, I will brag on the attendance that we have. the regulars, James, I think is what his name, James Smith.
I don't know his name.
Whatever, James Johnson and Bill Ward. I mean, that's their. They put their heart into this thing. Good people.
And that's a hard thing to put your heart into.
I just want to add something funny to what you said. You don't tell anybody who you are. Well, I don't either. And so I went to a roll-off.
It's yeah, but you're about, popular.
It's been about 3 or 4 years ago. And I took a load of limbs and stuff, and I backed up, and I was throwing them off and everything. And the guy came out there, and he started talking. And I said, do you get much metal here? And just talking, you know. He said, yeah, we do. I said, well, do they steal it? And he went, well, they used to. He says, but now I take it home myself. He said, because. He said, if I don't take it home, then they come at night and get it, so I just take it myself. I went, oh, okay. I never said anything.
Well, we used to have a kid out of Harrison Blue, and he sat on his tailgate of his truck, and everybody thought it was an old toaster or whatever. He clipped the cord off, and he spent his day out there stripping the wire, keeping the copper, stripping the insulation off. He's passed away now, but he did it for years. I mean,
who, Mr. Pons?
No, Carson. Carson, what's his name?
You know, for what they have to sit through and the job they're doing,
I couldn't
care less.
Well, this was an older man that told me that, and you know what? I never said a word.
Those people that's working at your roll-off sites, that's people that was on paid Social Security 40 years ago, and you know they get a check $600-$700.
What do you want to make?
And some of them do that kind of thing to supplement buying food or medicine.
Well, like you said, the things are going in taking it for drugs and, you know.
I didn't say a thing to him. You know, he distributed the word. And if he made $300 a year with a little bit of copper.
Somebody put a box of plates up there on top of the dumpster lid, you know, and they put them in their car. It ain't, it, I mean. Instead of recording in the dumpster, if they can have them, more power to them. It gets to the yard sale, they make some money off of it.
That's right.
More power to them.
That's right. That's unless you got to care.
They put some effort into it anyway.
Okay.
We got sidetracked a little bit.
We got sidetracked.
But now we're storing.
All right. Yeah, that's going to be tough. Oh, store.
Go ahead.
She wants to.
Oh, okay.
Well, just to bring everybody up to speed, in the short time that I've been involved with the Restore Act funding, we've worked with staff and consultants to familiarize ourselves with the Taylor County State Expenditure Plan, which is the first document in your packet. This plan right here. Mm-hmm. This is what's published in our state expenditure plan. And the properties that are being considered for acquisition, which is everything in your packet. Last year, Kenneth was tasked with developing what we'll call a decision matrix to identify criteria that's per this approved SEP for potential property acquisition and development. This criteria was discussed during the June 21st, 2018 board workshop and used to develop the approved list of properties that was submitted to the Gulf Consortium. This criteria and the list of properties is identified on the worksheet in front of you, and that's the long worksheet that you have. In recent discussion with Gulf Consortium representatives, we have learned that Taylor County has a large amount of properties under consideration. We have been encouraged to keep in mind that such a large amount of properties will not only be difficult to manage through the feasibility study process, but also through the acquisition process, because the reporting is voluminous, from what I understand. This doesn't appear to be a rule, but more guidance from a practical viewpoint. So utilizing the guidance as outlined in the state expenditure plan, staff has prepared a review matrix that ranks properties based on the listed criteria. And again, this is that long sheet in front of you. Now, I've also received requests to add two additional projects to the existing list that aren't even on your list. So we're at a point that we're requesting concurrence from the board regarding the next recommended state of action. And there are several ways you can go. And I realize that just recently the board was updated that we can change the properties that are in the state expenditure plan. And staff and I are working with the Gulf Consortium now to try to get a definitive answer of what has to be amended, what doesn't have to be amended. So as an example, if you look at the state expenditure plan, one of the first points that we noticed was the milestones and the estimated total dollars. And what is estimated for the
top. What page did you?
I'm sorry. Budget and funding sources. It's the last page.
Yeah.
If you'll jump to that. So we are allocated $300,000 for feasibility studies. And I'm unsure where these totals came from. And the gentleman who updated us just recently is no longer working on this project. So we're trying to to get on some more solid footing. And we're kind of starting from scratch with some of our philosophies, I would say. The property acquisition, property appraisals, excuse me, are $200,000 for a total of $500,000 for planning. And then property acquisition is $11 million. Final design and permitting is $300,000 and construction is $760,000. So my first question when I looked at the budget and the funding sources was, can we change these totals? Because $760,000 for construction seems small if you're looking at a $12.6 million budget.
In agreement.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought about. That ain't enough to build any footprints.
Correct. But when we questioned the Gulf Consortium, regarding moving this money around, we got two different answers. So at the end of the month, we will be, there is another Gulf Consortium meeting. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a meeting before and a meeting after. And we plan to attend as much of it as we can because we need to ask specific questions about this.
Yeah, if you can save money on the feasibility study and the appraisals, why couldn't you take that savings and then put it into the construction? Now, was the $300,000 for the feasibility for the properties that we have initially put on the list? So
yes.
So if we added more properties and considered all of them,
it'll be for the ones that's on your, the ones that you ultimately approve as,
right.
I want you to look at these.
Right. So we
whether
would
that's
submit,
two or right. 20, it doesn't matter.
Let me ask this. Have we ascertained whether or not we can add properties?
No.
We can.
We can?
We can add things.
That's with a caveat. Here's, when I asked that, again, we got two different answers. We were told, yes, that you really need to reduce your list. Now, that was guidance. That wasn't the rule.
Well, I agree. We need to reduce this list a whole lot.
And then, we were told, yes, but that may take an SEP amendment, and that's what we're trying to clarify because there seems to be some confusion, not on our part, but there seems to be some confusion about what we can or cannot do. So,
I would just say that from your perspective, from y'all's perspective right now, yes, you can add projects to the list for consideration, mm-hmm. and then screen those to where you have a list of projects that you are wanting to move forward with, which would be a subset of that overall list.
Okay, at some point in time, I think we're going to have a cutoff time.
See, I told you she's saying.
Because otherwise, you know, we can end up with more. And I just want to say this. I think that we should take the politics out of this, the friendships out of this, because mm-hmm. we all have some kind of friend or acquaintance
relative.
Or something, or relative, that they're in hard times, they need to sell their property, or they just want to sell their property for whatever reason. I'd like to see our engineer and whoever else go through the list and, for me, come back with three options to work off of, narrow it down. That takes the politics and the kinship and the friendship out of it. And just because I can go down there and look at every property and walk over every step of it, but I don't have the expertise to say, oh, well, this would be a good one to dredge, or this would cost a lot more money, impossible to dredge, permitting, parking.
We've already started that process.
Yeah, so I'd like to see you come back with, say, three.
Come back. We're right here.
Yeah. I'd like for you or staff to, and I agree with everything you've said so far. I want to have a little input into what, or at least an understanding, what criteria were you using to judge the properties by.
I want to say one thing about what we're trying to get in the long-range plan. We're trying to get more boat ramps.
That's right.
Boat ramp, parking for the boat ramp. Access to the Gulf and spread it out of the area where it's already at. You know, get it out where people won't be all clustered right down in the middle of Keaton Beach.
Well, and that's what our SEP says. If you follow the spirit of this guy, I mean, because we need some type of policy to follow.
Common sense tells you if there's a boat ramp already there, you don't have to go to permit a boat ramp. All you got to do is get a rebuild permit and go there and remodel the permit. It's a lot easier. And then I'll tell you, if you got a boat ramp there, DEP and Corps of Engineers would be a lot easier to deal with permit-wise to remodel that boat ramp than if you started from scratch. And the same way with digging a canal. You know, you're going to have to jump to a bigger hoop than we got money for to start and dig a new canal. We can't even get the ones we already got cleaned out much less take a new one.
That's right.
You know.
Now, and also, if you're talking about putting in a boat ramp, obviously, if you're going to put in a boat ramp, you got to have some parking.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to have enough uplands.
You got to
have a park at least 4 or 5 vehicles. I mean, or more the better.
You guys are hitting on so much of what is covered in the SEP that I think if you let us kind of hit the highlights, and then we will get to the conclusions that are shown in the matrix here.
Okay.
I think what we're following the spirit of everything you just said.
Yes.
And it may be just a little bit easier to kind of get through this.
Go ahead.
Collectively, we got something.
Before we do anything else, let me ask this question. We may have to mess with the SCP a little bit.
That's fine.
You know, possibly. If that man's curve, do we have money to buy the property? Or could that be used? We have to change the SCP to use some of that money for that.
How about we go through what we have and why we have it, and then when we're done with that, we can... Because I found this morning... It's a criteria that says the eligible projects under the Restore Act.
Yeah.
And then I would say that let's look at that list and then see if the project that you're wanting to do is within the context of that eligibility.
Gotcha. Work with me.
So, the first thing in your packet is the state expenditure plan. Now, I will only disagree with what Wanda said to one extent. I may have received this, possibly, some long, long time ago, but when Mr. Lakey tasked me with going through each of the projects that were being proposed for acquisition and to come up with some type of a ranking, this came out of Kenneth's brain. It didn't come off any sheet of paper. It didn't come off all any expenditure plan. Now, the beauty is there is a tremendous amount of similarity in what I was considering to have an importance to what was stated as being the objectives and the important criteria in the state expenditure plan. And if we look in the very first paragraph, it says, much like you said, the coastal access program involves county acquisition of coastal parcels and construction of boat ramps and other recreational amenities to improve public access to the coastal zone. Okay, so immediately I said, this is my objective. This is what I'm going to be focusing on. I don't need to focus outside of that. If I go down there more towards the bottom of it, in the need and justification section, this is the reality. Taylor County maintains existing public boat ramps at Keaton and Steinhatchee. We all know that. Those are the most popular ones that we have. These facilities are strained beyond capacity. I think we've all seen that.
When you say strained, you mean already used too much.
Right, sir.
Yes, sir. Crowded.
Strain's not a good thing. They are strained beyond capacity. The number of vehicles and vessels causes severe congestion on the roadways and waterways in these two areas of Taylor County, putting extreme pressure on both the local infrastructure and natural resources. And I think everyone in the room would agree with that. Mm-hmm. These are the observations that the state expenditure plan has picked up on. When you flip on to the next page, the Keaton Beach boat ramp also suffers from a poor location at the headwaters of a densely developed residential canal. We have all seen pictures and we've heard the upset comments when somebody is sitting there in the channel behind 30 other boats for an hour waiting to get in or get out. That's what this is embodying or encapsulating. Taylor County residents have become increasingly frustrated with the vehicle and boat traffic problems in these small communities and have asked the county to explore additional boat rent facilities in Keaton Beach, Steinhatchee, and other areas throughout the county. That's where we're talking about. So what the state expenditure plan is saying is, maybe it's not the best idea to focus where I already have one.
Right.
Maybe it's a better idea to take and let's spread the wealth congestion into some of the other areas. Mind you, I'm not making this up. This is all right here. The next section is the purpose and objective. So we know our overall concept. What is my objective in these dollars? The purpose of this program are to increase the number of public boat ramp facilities and to expand capacity of existing Taylor County FWC boat ramp facilities. So if I have an opportunity to expand an existing facility that isn't going to cause an additional undue strain or hardship on the one that's already there, I probably should take advantage of it, or at least consider it as a possibility. The objectives they've taken and listed in 1, 2, 3. Number one, improve public access to the Gulf of Mexico. That's been a long-standing obligation, I think, that this board has and more than one occasion saying, I'm not getting rid of that property because it has access to the water. Mm-hmm. I've heard it more than once.
Right.
Number two, take pressure off of existing infrastructure and natural resources at the Keaton and Steinhatchee locations. That just put me right, that clued me in to say, okay, if somebody is saying put another one right beside one that's already right there, that's not a good idea.
No.
We're making a bad situation worse.
If we're talking about a Keaton Beach boat ramp and you're talking about hypothetically expanding that boat ramp, better buy a helicopter to get through there.
And that's what we're gonna see in here. And number three,
exactly.
Enhance local economy by providing coastal infrastructure to support a greater number of visitors to Taylor County. That's our objective. Ecotourism is very important to our community, and if we can provide the infrastructure and the opportunities for them to come into the county, that's where we need to focus our efforts. And that's what these dollars are for. We've already said our purpose is we want to increase our coastal access. And the objective is to divest from the existing locations so that we cannot exacerbate that hardship that's already obvious. When I go to the page 189 at the top, here's where we see the criteria. This is the first time we're starting to see it. The first step in this program is to conduct a feasibility study to determine suitability of the various sites. This would have made it a little bit easier. Instead of me having to think about all this stuff, I could have just read the list.
Mm-hmm.
Here's six criteria that it's saying that a feasibility study will use to determine the order of importance for different properties. Relieve existing vehicular traffic congestion. Relieve existing boat traffic congestion. Have navigable channel access of at least 3 feet mean low water. Have paved road access. Have adequate upland area for parking number of vehicles and boat trailers, which you just mentioned. Have additional upland area for other park amenities. So, the beauty of a coincidence is that I addressed in the criteria that I was looking at hits on these points, because common sense would tell you that these are the things that we need to site a facility, and these are the objectives that we should be looking for, is to kind of get away from what we're already pushing as much as we possibly can into. So phase one of this effort is going to be a feasibility study. We'll rank the proposed sites and potentially other sites with respect to the above listed criteria. Mm-hmm. I think we're at phase one. Mm-hmm. We're at phase one pre-formal feasibility. I think we're at phase one feasibility from the board's standpoint to say, here's a list of all the people that are coming and saying, hey, I'm offering what I have. The board needs to take and say, well, based on what we want to achieve and what we consider is a necessity for each one of those sites, we think that these are the ones that we should be exerting our efforts to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We only have a finite amount of resources. We shouldn't be going after a laundry list of 100 different properties.
That's
we need to have some management.
Right, we've got to put it in there. Yeah.
Phase two is for this study will estimate cost of property acquisition, design, permitting, construction. So my guess is that once we narrow the list down, let's say we've got 15, we take the top five. Once we get it to that point and the Gulf Consortium determines that, hey, yes, all of these are suitable sites, we're going to go ahead and collectively do a feasibility study, an expanded feasibility study of these sites, and that's where you're going to get into, okay, how much is it going to cost to acquire it? We start doing appraisals. What's the reality of design? What will it bring associated permitting, and is that possible? That second phase is when we're going to get a little bit more in depth. And it may be that of those top five, you see two or three of those kind of fall out because of certain nuances about them. So, the one thing I will say, the last thing I'm going to say on these, I think, is for existing FWC properties that it made reference to, if we're going to consider a concept of co-location, a property that's managed by them that we want to co-locate also, it says in here that an MOA or a memorandum of agreement would be required to, if we were to expand anything, pave roads, construct additional amenities, and we kind of expected that. And, you know, we could address that through, you know, it's not uncommon to have like a 99-year lease or something that we
right.
do that with.
And that is permitted. I mean, that is allowed from what I understand.
And it recognizes in the next paragraph that says, by partnering with FWC, the existing facilities could be expanded with minimal environmental impact.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you can co-locate, like you were saying, at a site that's already there and has a presence, expanding that presence is a lot easier than creating a new presence.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought on that is when I get to the point of trying to leap that hurdle, who do I want standing beside me?
That's right.
My guess is, if I'm going to try and address a sovereign submerged land lease with the governor and cabinet, who is on the board of trustees, who decides whether you can or can't do that,
mm-hmm.
I'd much rather have the state of Florida stand beside me.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're endorsing my project, I think it's going to be much better received by the governor and cabinet that here we got a state and a political subdivision coming to us saying, we want to co-locate to better enhance the accessibility for the general state of Florida.
I totally agree.
Okay.
Agree.
So,
one question.
I'm sorry, I get on a roll line.
Are there any properties on our list that would meet all of these criteria?
Why don't we go through the list first, and then you will have that answer for
but you. But my point is, I don't think you're going to find a single property that meets all of these. One might not have a paved road.
No, sir.
The other one might not have a -3 feet mean the water.
Understood. And there's probably never going to be a diamond that's hiding out there.
Yeah, I don't
but think. What we all realize is that if we have agreed upon a criteria, we should be pushing forward with the project that meets the most and the best of those criteria as possible. Realizing that all of us don't have every aspect, but let's go forward with as many of them as we can.
Let's go ahead.
Okay.
So that's, to me, this
is how we frame what we look at. That's the state expenditure plan. This is what we're trying to achieve. This is how we achieve it. So that's our guiding document.
Now these criteria that we have listed here,
yes, sir,
they overlap with some criteria that you use, but these are not your original criteria.
I'm telling you, I read this last week, and when I read it, I was like, wow, you know, that's pretty slick.
Well, and my question, and the reason I said that I thought Kenneth's criteria mirrored the SCP. I mean, I don't know what was first, the chicken or the egg. I don't know that this wasn't developed using Kenneth's criteria.
No.
But this is obviously they're very close.
Yes.
Well, I'd like for this to become, unless somebody has a better idea, the board's criteria.
Well, it is. It's in the improved SCP.
It's in the SCP.
There's safety of that. And I think as long as the criteria that we use includes that and can be more strenuous or stringent,
mm-hmm.
in other words, having maybe an additional criteria, as long as we cover those six, there's safety in saying that, you know, we are submitting projects that are consistent with the state expenditure plan.
Yeah.
I don't think we should cut any of them out.
No.
But obviously you have the luxury of saying, well, I only want it on the location that only pine trees grow, or, you know, just being ridiculous.
All right. At some point in the process, Kenneth, are you going to evaluate each of these properties?
I'm fixing to do that.
All right, good, that's what I want to get. I want to give you one thing I've noticed since the story, I've been going most of all the meetings. The gut feeling I got was exactly what Ken's talking about, is access. And every other county commission I've talked to, they come up with projects, they want to plant sea grass and do this and do that, and then people kind of shun them, and even in the talks about it, you know, before what they were talking about.
Yeah, my mindset right now is nothing more than providing an acquisition proposal for a new boating facility.
That's exactly, or
improvement of an existing.
I even seen them put a rock at FWC talking about restoring the sea grass and stuff like that. And they had professor after professor come up there and give talks on, oh, we can plant more grass and we can do all this. And they, you know, we don't want that. That's not what we want. We want to get people into the water, not over. I'm just giving you an overview of what I've seen over the years of what it's come down to that.
Yes, sir. So my starting point from Mr. Leahy was I received this list, which was in, I think it says June 20th, 2017. And this was the list of properties that I believe was offered to the board for consideration under this this proposal of the POT 3 acquisition. Y'all are all hopefully familiar with, I've seen this at some point in time. So, it wasn't me throwing anything. I actually tried to put another one in here, Adams Beach, and you know it lined up just getting cold just because of suitability. It fell out the way it should. So what I started with was a list of these projects, or these parcels. What you should have next is a map. And what I did is I mapped the location of those and I labeled them just so that you can kind of get a geographic reference of where each of the properties that we're talking about. You can associate a name with a location along our coastline.
That's good.
Yes, ma'am. Some of them, you know, you're more familiar with. Some of them you may not be based on the naming of it. So this just kind of gives you a physical reference of where it is. Now, the meat and the potatoes. The large sheet that you see here is we took that list of projects and I literally took them the way they were listed, put number one right on down, realizing that that sequence was going to wind up switching and swapping based upon how they met a criteria. So what you see on the left side is, like it or not, the word is ranking. And that's what is the ultimate goal, whether you want to admit it or not, is we need to know what our number one project is, and we need to know what our last project is. Next, after that is a description, and I tried to use the naming convention that was on the board approved list so that you had that column. The very next column is, and the first three columns all pertain just to the property. The next column is the parcel number. That gives us a physical reference. If you guys on your own time want to go to the property appraiser website, pull up the parcel number, you can go and look at it yourself. The next column is the total acres. That is based upon those parcels. That's not anything beyond that. It is, if I pulled up parcel number 2487-0719-000, and I hit information on that, we're going to see that it says 347 acres.
Okay.
Our perspective is that when they said we're offering our property, and that's the parcel, it's in its entirety. I didn't take a subset or anything. So now we get into our actual evaluation criteria. And as you can look at the top, you see that there is a label called higher importance with a blue arrow pointing to the left. And then on the right side, there is another label saying less importance with a blue arrow to the right. That means that the
mulch. It's up here, right here, with the arrow.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I hope it's blue.
I can't see the color.
There's no color on ours.
Well, it's the arrow point to the left and arrow point to the right. The shaded one.
Over to the left, that's higher importance.
From left, right. From left to right, you're going to read higher importance to lesser importance. Okay, and that was just a way to kind of sort it so that we can say what means the most to us relative to what is still important, but it's not, doesn't have as much importance as some of the other criteria. What you'll notice on this whole matrix is the first one is community support. To me, that's something that you really have to have. Projects are much better received if the location or the close proximity of where you're putting it, if those individuals are receptive to that being located there. It's going to be a lot less heartburn down the road if we're putting something that at least they have some level of favoritism to. But not knowing that right now, I felt it inappropriate for me to presuppose a community support. I think that's going to come later when we start actually finalizing this stuff. So I left it blank so that it wouldn't affect the overall ranking. The next column is, I think, one that we consider probably our most important, and that's that it decongests existing usage patterns. So in my line of thinking, I was more focused on, do I really want to take and put one, let's just use the Keaton Beach Marina site for an example. Do I really want to take and encourage added volume going in at the Keaton Beach Marina site when I've already set the context in my state implementation plan that's suggesting and guiding me to move away from those already congested areas? And my answer is no.
Right.
So if I think that it's going to exacerbate the congestion, I'm going to assign it a lesser weight than one that may perhaps move 3 miles down the road and have a much lesser impact on that overall existing congestion. So I would give it a higher ranking.
Public would too.
And you can see that what some of the values in these are, and it's basically a yes or no. And then what I tried to give you was a proximity to another close landmark, that being another boat ramp. And I will say that Kenneth is human. On number 5, under the Lundy property, I wound up copying a cell reference, so that one should actually read, yes, but it's 0.7 miles to Keaton Beach boat ramp versus 3 miles to the Steamhatchee boat ramp. And I think those of you that know the Lundy property realize that's not, that was a mistake. So that's the...
That's point what?
0.7 to Keaton Beach boat ramp. And really, those aren't road miles, it's profile. So I literally, in GIS, I would pop the beginning of my measurement and I would measure over here and whatever it is. So that's the only mistake that I've noticed on this when I read through it last night. So what I gave you was a yes or no answer and then a proximity to another important landmark. The second one is sufficient acreage above the mean high water. In Taylor County, our mean high water is typically around just under or right at a 2-foot elevation. So, in order to have acreage that would be considered usable at those mean high tides, I look at the properties and try to determine what portion, if any, of those properties was at least 1 foot above that mean high tide. So that being close to 2 foot, what I looked at was, are there portions of property that are at least at a 3-foot elevation or higher? Because anything less than that has a large propensity to be underwater routinely.
Mm.
It's a high tide twice a day every day, whether you like it or not.
Right.
So what I do is I look at, does it have sufficient acreage? And then sufficient sounds subjective. It is, unless you decide I need X number. So what I looked at was the Keaton Beach boat ramp. If we look at the Keaton Beach boat ramp, there is 2 lanes available. There are right at 45 or so spaces on that side. That is a 3.5-acre, I think, site. And if you exclude what's east of Marina Road, which is the old septic system, and kind of trim out a little bit of what was the old retention area when it used to be an RV park there, you kind of wind up with about 3 acres. So that's what we need to be... Let me just make sure my number's right. Yeah, 3 acres is in the title. That's kind of the minimum size that I need if I know that my objective is to put something kind of comparable to that facility. Mm-hmm. So that immediately sets it. Okay, is there sufficient acreage, sufficient equating to, is there at least 3 contiguous, that meaning all together,
mm-hmm.
3 contiguous acres on that site that is above that mean high tide elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Simple at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of yes or no. Mm-hmm. Because I physically went through each of these properties, and the reason you're seeing some orange on these is because, I guess it's probably been about 5 years ago or so ago, the Suwannee River in through some of FEMA, they went and they flew LIDAR, which is a laser-developed topography that you're able to create contours of the... It's that sheet right there, Mr. Mintz. Is you create elevation contours for all these properties. It's a terrific planning tool. Because outside of going out and physically surveying these sites, I can look at from my desktop, turn on those contour layers, and these orange lines that you have here, painstakingly as it was, I literally traced all of the 3-foot elevation contours on those properties to be able to determine the size of that polygon or that enclosed area to compare that against, is there 3 acres or not?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I reached that conclusion.
That's 3 contiguous.
3 contiguous acres. It's not a tenth here And 2.9 over here, it is three that's together.
Then Lindsay Allen has three together.
We will get to that, sir.
Go shoot.
The next column is that you see waterway access. Obviously, the state expenditure plan realized that if our objective is to provide additional coastal access, and we equate coastal access with trying to, at some point in time, get a boat in the water, you got to have a means of getting that boat in the water. So there are different ways to do that. You have man-made canals that are existing. You have some tidal access, and also you can have riverine access. We have three large rivers in this county that can also be included in there. So what I did was I said yes or no, and that yes or no is based upon it having touching water directly. And I would give you a clarification of that on whether it was a tidal access, a canal access. And obviously, yes, it's going to be a higher ranking than a no. This kind of goes without saying. So then the next one is kind of one that I started considering just with the Christy, for example. She routinely goes kayaking. Her and her kids. Mm-hmm. And so to me, if I were to be in her shoes, one consideration that I would be thinking of is, can I go to this facility safely and not necessarily be worried that, you know, I'm out here all alone in isolation and somebody's going to, you know, the world's going crazy, so somebody's going to grab me and take me away. So I started looking at safety considerations. Is it right next to a major highway? Is it way out in the boondocks? And I put in there my perception of whether there were none, whether there was some, whether it was, or whether there are safety considerations. And then I clarified that in there. If I were telling you yes, I would tell you why I thought it was. The next one is existing public access. And this is focusing on whether or not there is a public means of getting to the property that is being offered. And then what I would do is I would clarify that on whether or not there is a public means to get there, but whether it was paved or unpaved in its condition today. And I also, I caveated one of them, whether it was a single lane access width versus a double lane access width. Then the next one is, I kind of looked down the road a little bit and said, you know, okay, looking at this property and its characteristics, do I anticipate that it's going to have a high development cost? It's going to take a lot of work to get it to what we want it to be, or is it going to take less effort to get it to what we want to be? Obviously, if you've got a flattened out clean slate right on the water, well, a lot of property above the mean high tide and out of the wetlands, it's not going to take as much to improve that property. We've got one that's in the middle of the woods and there's swamps all around it. That one's going to be a lot more difficult. So I gave you, and all I quantified it based on high, moderate, and low, just to kind of avoid specificity right now, realizing that once we get a little more in depth of it, and as the state expenditure plan tells us, that phase two, once we cut our list down, that phase two is going to flush all that out. The next one was just a little bit of, I'm an engineer, so I have to see the trees. I got to look beyond the forest. And I start thinking, okay, is there electricity there? Is there water and sewer available? Because I know inevitably we start providing facility and then somebody wants an outside light so they can see when they come in. And then next thing, all right, well, we need a restroom there because I need to use a restroom before I go when I get back. So I try to think of, is that infrastructure there? And I would just literally tell you yes or no, and then a couple of them I think I told you how far it is away. And then the last column is kind of it's offered for providing additional insight and clarity. So I would tell you that, like the first one, Higgins Cove, I'm telling you it's a government-owned park with existing restroom and picnic facilities. There's some pluses right there. There's three pluses in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I looked at each of these evaluation criterias with my road list, and I went through, my property list, and I went through and I started filling in the blanks for every property. And what you can see in your packet, I think she may have stapled these, but let's just look at the first one for Hagen's Cove, because this, you're going to see it through my eyes. And if you look at your first one for Hagen's Cove, you're going to see that the first sheet is the overall property. Y'all see this?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's just the overall, the whole piece of property. But because it's such a large piece, this is really where we're going to be focusing our efforts if we were to try and co-locate this. This is down at the park itself. I spearfished just right by here, so I know it pretty well. The next thing that I looked at was, let's start looking at, are there areas that are more than 3 acres that are above, the at least 1 foot above the mean high tide? And that's when I started drawing my orange polygons. And so the areas that are inside of these, you can see there's two donuts that are in there, two enclaves that are less than that, because you can see the water inside it, is those are the areas in this portion of the site that meet that criteria. As a matter of fact, if we look at the matrix, we can see sufficient acreage above the mean high tide line, or mean high water above 3 acres. Yes, there's 50 plus acres there. So that, at least from this standpoint, is an issue that is no longer a consideration. It meets that criteria. Then the next thing I start looking at is, from a permittability standpoint, how much of that area that I'm looking at is going to cause me issues when I start trying to develop it because of the existence of environmental sensitive areas. Typically, you wouldn't necessarily expect, being above that three foot elevation, that it would have some, but the reality is that you will still have some environmentally sensitive areas that are above that. And then the last one was just for when we get to a little bit of more development and start thinking about buildings. I just looked at the overall flood impacts if we were to choose this property. And what you can see on this one are V-zones, VEs, and elevations associated with that. And then the last set of documentation, and this is just so that we have the record of it, is the property appraiser's printout for that particular parcel, where you can see some of the information that's on the matrix is coming directly from this information. So it's giving you the size and acreage, the parcel numbers, acreage, and I think that's all I needed from that. Yeah. So for all of these 15 properties, I went through all of that information, put that information into here, and then physically went through and looked at the list and, okay, my first column that has information, decongest existing usage patterns. I moved all the yeses to the tops and the noes to the bottom. Okay, so from my perspective, I'm only really focusing on the yeses. Then I look at the sufficient acreage. Well, of my properties that are yeses, I need to resort those based upon which ones are providing kind of the best bang for the buck with providing a lot of facilities, a lot of acreage. So better acreage, lesser acreage within the yeses. So we can start seeing that these things start mixing and matching. Waterway access. Okay, I decongest existing usage. I can have sufficient acreage, but maybe it doesn't have access to the water. What good is it if I'm trying to put in a boat ramp if I'm across the road from the water? It's not any good to me. Then the next thing is existing public access. Yeses are going to be at the top. Partials and those are going to be at the bottom. Electric and water and sewer, same thing. My concept was, once we establish a criteria, we start sorting those in the order of how they meet that criteria. And once you go from the left to the right, you start seeing that the natural progression is the one that best meets the most criteria winds up at the top. The one that least meets the best criteria lines up at the bottom. And that's how this was assembled a year ago for consideration for you guys.
This is a detailed, methodical way to go about it. The data is there.
I don't really know how to do it any different. Sorry.
I mean, this is the best documents that, I mean, these are great, Kenneth, and it gives us everything that we need. So it looks like to me you're from this ranking and considering everything put together, that Pagan's Cove would be our first option right now.
And I would expand that just a little more and tell you, I think one of the ancillary benefits of Hagen's Cove, beyond it co-locating with the state of Florida property and them already having picnic pavilions and bird viewing structure that's down there, that if you are familiar with that area, there is several hundreds of feet of sandy flat that is actually in front of Hagen's Cove, almost to the point to where you get even with Sponge Point.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that location that your seagrasses start emerging. So if we know that the Big Bend Seagrass Aquatic Reserve covers our entire coast, except for, there's a little exclusion, where? At Van Hallway River. So the balance of the property, balance of our coastline, all of these are going to have impacts associated with dredging if we're going to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I know dredging is going to be an obstacle, then let me just kind of push that aside for now. But when I do get to the point of considering it, if I can do half of my dredging and it's going through sand that doesn't have seagrasses, I think I'm twice as likely to get that permitted than if I were on one that went right through grass the entire length of it. And that's just my thinking, is that I know the tides really well because I spearfish right up in that little cove just to the south of, or to the east of Hagen's Cove. I know when I can go in there and I know when I got to get out. And I've swam every little bit of that for the last 30 years. That whole sand bottom, an environmentalist would have a hard time making a very valid argument that it is an environmentally sensitive stretch of area for that length. If I can go, let's say, another 1,000 feet, I've achieved my depth obligation, which is one of the criteria in the state expenditure plan, that I need that -3 MLW, mean the water. So that's why I see so many promising things about it, is that if there is an opportunity, that property just kind of pushed itself to the top. Dallas Creek follows that same level of thinking, with the exception of long, long, long time ago when I went out of Dallas Creek one time, my tail spent the night out there on that flat.
Right.
Because that tide left. And I know that in Dallas Creek, you better know your tides if you're going to get in and out of that. It is a beautiful location, and it is in an area. I don't spearfish because it's dark water and there's a lot of sharks down there. But from a fishing standpoint, hook and line, it is phenomenal down there. You have to know what you're doing to get in and out of there, unless we were to be able to. And these are tidal creeks, so there's a little bit limited width of it, whereas you wouldn't have it at Hagen's Cove. So that's why, to me, it kind of drops down under Hagen's Cove. The next one is Doc Hudson's place. And I would lie to you if I told any of you that I really would hate to see that. I love Fish Creek. I love it dearly. I fished there since I was, 18 years old.
My wife's favorite, Fish Creek.
My gosh. It is a beautiful area, and there's an abundance of fish in those locations. But from a development standpoint, Doc Hudson's place is it's pretty easy. You know, it's a 20-something acre parcel. It has some fringes of environmental on the sides of it, but the overall openness of it, it's to where we could go in and still elevate some of it without environmental impacts. But that cove, he's got a belly, and I'm sorry for using some normal common terms, but anyway, there's a belly in the depth, kind of right there close to the shore, and then it kind of picks up a little bit, where you kind of tie back into Cape Bettijean's old channel that come out,
mm-hmm.
and then in no time you're hitting the shark holes, which is really deep. But most of that length, if not all of that length, you're going to have a seagrass impact the whole way. There's some sparse seagrass closer to the hill, but then you get into your turtle grass and stuff a little bit further out. So that's not insurmountable, I don't think. But it's obviously much more difficult than running 1,000 foot through a sand area. That's why I think it kind of moved to the top, closer to the other ones that had some additional acreages and amenities that kind of pushed them up. The next one down is Bird Island. Bird Island, obviously, they have some water access. There's a channel on the north side of it that, you know, Clint kind of runs in and out all the time, and the man fishes probably most every day.
He's got a boat ramp.
He does. It's he's got a small boat ramp that's there.
And that little channel does not tie into the Keaton Beach.
It does not tie into it. If you look at the way it lays out, Clint's pretty smart. He runs straight out, hit shark holes. You know, he runs out, and then once you get to that level, usually you're running shallow enough that you can turn and go any direction. But one of the configurations that it brings with it is Bird Island is kind of like this little narrow strip. And some of the acres that you're going to see in here, I would give you a reference, but I tell you that that's excluding county right-of-way. I didn't think it fair to the other properties to take and include the county right-of-way as part of their usable property when I wasn't doing that on other properties. I felt it was kind of mixing apples and oranges. The reality is that if we were to go in there and try to develop that, obviously we take advantage of all the property that's there. But in its configuration, if you were to consider a boating facility, logistically it'd be a little bit difficult to be able to come in and try to come in, maneuver, back up, park, and retrieve your boat just because it's such a narrow peninsula type configuration. Even though it's up there because it has some of the other attributes, you know, it does provide some separation from other infrastructure. You've got public access right up off of a beach road. You've got, you just do have the acreage. And you have water access. So it has enough pluses that it edged it up. But then if you'll look at my comments where I try to provide additional clarification, I tell you there's an air corridor that's difficult to accommodate traffic circulation. So that's when we start realizing, okay, yeah, this one's great and it meets this criteria, but is it really going to achieve what we hope for? Now, could it be a kayak place? Possibly. You know, is it going to be able to go in there and put in a 30-foot vessel? No. I don't think so. You know, so it has promise as long as you understand what that use is before you pursue it.
And you could make a U-turn.
It would be tight.
It's tight. Make a U-turn back in there.
Let me just tell you that our design width on a cul-de-sac is as tight as it physically can be. I did it. Literally, I went to the school yard and told the school bus, do a donut. Let me measure your inside wheel pack. Our cul-de-sacs, and not to say that a bus is going to be going down there, but a truck and a trailer is. The inside radius is 30 feet.
You need to reach that.
The outside radius is 45. So if I don't have that much ground, how am I going to maneuver
above the trailer?
That's
right.
So I want to have a reason for reaching the conclusion that I do and not just pull it out of the air.
And if I can interject something just real quick, we put together some binders for each commissioner, specifically about Restore Act. And within those binders, there's a section where our grants director, has looked at these properties from, you know, additional grants we could receive and also bundling. So we don't have to acquire just one property at a time. There are conditions in which we can acquire two properties at a time if they're in close physical location. So it could be that if Bird Island or Palm Grove Marina or one of those types of properties is something favorable for canoers and kayakers, we can bundle them with another property and acquire them at the same time with one grant application.
Right, and by the same token, if you could, if Hagen's Cove worked, and then if you went down to the 25 acres that Dr. Hutchison's property, that's going to be, if, you know, that would be a good win-win in my estimate, because you've got lots of acreage. They're not that far apart.
So we are looking at that opportunity as well, but we realize we need to flesh this out before we move any further with other grants we could obtain or any other considerations.
Is there any advantage in trying to purchase these properties one at a time, or could we?
No, we can bundle.
Just bundle a whole 6, 7, or 5, do it all at one time.
As far as the feasibility studies?
Yeah, and do the feasibility studies.
I believe we need to do the feasibility studies at the same time, and then we could plan how to bundle the property acquisition and apply for different grants or different aspects of it, of the project.
My wife pointed out to me on Facebook, somebody had posted the Zillow offering of Dr. Hutchins' property. And I think the price has come down on it considerably from what it was.
Mm-hmm. There's one aspect of that anyway. When it gets appraised, it's not going to be nothing like what they wanted when it gets appraised. All these properties will appraise different than what
they want. They'll drop out like that.
That's exactly right. And there's one other thing I want to inject in the start of the list here. The first three, about that far under the sand, mostly is solid rock. I floundered, airboated, walked, netted my whole life in the whole coastline from Sherrod Island to St. Mark's. And everywhere there's a little old Google hole in the bottom of it is rock. I mean, and I know you probably haven't ever dug it, I put posts down in places out there, you know, when we were netting years ago, putting out straw nets and Higgins Cove, you can't really put down a post because it's solid rock right there. And you talk about dredging, you're not just talking about dredging, you're talking about blasting a rock formation to be able to have a canal, just like Deep Beach Canal. They blasted all that years ago.
And that's what I would expect, is I think any contractor would be short-sighted as if they were going to approach a project that was in close proximity to Keaton, not to expect at least somewhat similar conditions than the Keaton one. And those rocks aren't piled up there just for aesthetics.
Right. They didn't just fall out of the sky.
They come out of that channel. And,
yeah, that's right.
And I have drilled through this coastline from up around the Osceola down past the Spring Warrior. Right. And there's a chunk of rock, and I went from Mandalay down to Spring Warrior, and there's a chunk of rock, a core of rock, that's in my office now that, you know, we were achieving 7 inches per hour. I said 7 inches. I'm talking about that much. It took an hour to drill through. Right. So I know the quality of rock is there. It would be expected that type of presence is all along our coastline. And if I know that, then it's not a criteria that I would use to call the projects out. If it's common to all, then I wouldn't use it as a screening criteria.
Corps of Engineers years ago, the old timers told me, the reason they built that canal at Dickel Beach, because that was the only place on the Pettit County coastline that you could use a dredge. Rather than remove, you could use a dredge to drill, to get a canal out. When they built the crash boat base there for the airport here, when the crash, that was a crash plane. Recovery unit that stayed right there at Tickle Beach, that's what that was built for. the Corps of Engineers built, dug that canal out there, dredged it out, real quick. War was coming, they were trying to train pilots and all that kind of stuff. And that's the only place on Taylor County, because the only option they held me was the St. Andrew River. They were going to put, you know, crack up there, but they finally did it for the place to where they targeted. They wanted to put the targets out here for the plane to crack, so.
Yes, sir.
And that's the only place that you could actually dredge a canal. That was the one that they originally built the canal that they could reach Corps of Engineers did.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for us to be drilling and literally 2 foot over from one side,
solid
and it'd be well,
yes.
Solid flint rock here. I move
yes.
2 feet and it goes.
That's true.
You know, it's just a part of our formation, our geology.
Absolutely.
It's in this area that there is rock everywhere, and it's just below our surface. But you know, we know that, so it's.
Right.
If we know that's something that we're going to have to face, and obviously there's some that you have to face it less than others, I don't use it to say, okay, well, I'm not going to do it here unless there's already an existing creek line.
But there's another thing DEP and Corps of Engineers are going to hit you on the canal building is flush water into that canal.
I understood. We had
and
a big...
In Higgins Cove, there's no way to have flush water where you're talking about building that
I disagree.
Canal.
I disagree because I think if we were to put a channel there, that channel is going to go in that mouth of that basin out. That whole basin flushes every time. Yes, sir.
It's not
what we found
for a mile there. It's not knee deep.
It's not quite a mile, but it's flush with Sponge Point is when I see it start getting a little depth to it, and that's about where your seagrasses start really showing up thicker. And literally,
the seagrasses start showing up where the lowest tide don't dry out is the reason seagrass starts. It starts at the low tide level. At dead low tide, that seagrass, you got to run airboat all the way to that seagrass on just about dry ground. And wintertime, in 6 months out of the year, before you get to that seagrass, sometimes you get in the water at dead low tide on the northeast wind. Look.
Yes, sir.
You see what I'm saying?
I've been there, done that many, many times.
Okay.
Can we take a break at this point in time? Our pizza's going to get cold. If y'all want to continue talking while we eat, or if you want to take just a few minutes and eat and start back, is Kenneth, is that good with you? Or you?
If y'all want to stop and eat, I can run to the house and let the dog out and come back. Yes, ma'am.
That'll work.
Okay, well, grab me some pizza to eat on the run.
All right, pizza time.
And LaWanda, how much do we owe you for the pizza?
Oh,
it just.
You have the guitar rides after I eat.
$3,000?
$3,000?
That's kind of what each one of us has.
Okay. Well, I've got plenty of
reading. I think $5 is good.
Very important. When I retire off this commission, I'm not going to criticize the rest of you who's still here.
Did y'all write that down? I asked, did you write that down?
Yeah, I'll write